All right, Greg, so what are your thoughts on Omicron?
It's coming.
It's coming. It's among coming. Us. It's coming. Yeah. How are you mentally or with your business or with your life, how are you preparing for the potential of this new strand? Oh,
I don't think you can do anything but just take things as they come. I mean, I've been boosted. I've had the booster. We've got food supplies, but I don't see that's an issue.
And guns, in case they come for them?
Oh, why would you have it in? they're no good if you haven't got ammunition.
How long could you live if supply chains cut off and all the, like, everyone turned into chaos and it was just you and your house?
Long time. I've got a water tank.
Yeah.
I've got a garden.
Mm-hmm.
I've got hens. A stack of wine. I think I'll be fine.
Almost indefinitely,
and
wouldn't
the it? Only thing I probably do need to think about is an alternate source of power, a generator.
Mm.
Because if the power went off, all the frozen food wouldn't be much.
True. But then you've got that fresh garden and then you've got eggs.
Yeah, that's become a vegetarian.
Yeah. Well,
think how much weight I'd lose.
Oh, it'd drip off you, mate. Especially when you're fighting people off your hens.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I'd have to go out and patrol the hens.
Yeah, you'd have to get a roster, the kids and yourself. Yeah.
The neighbour who brings the hen that's gnawing her back probably won't bring the hen back.
This took a turn, eh? Maybe people want to talk about finance now. I was just preparing you for the potential emotional outburst you might experience when I read this first question and answer. It's a combination of entertainment, and I think it's good to create a distinction between the different advices out there and why they might be good or bad.
You mean those who can give advice and those who shouldn't give advice?
Yeah. Yep. So this is a question and statement, somewhat long-winded team, but hang with me. So the question Mary Holm was asked based on her book: I'm just about to finish your book, A Richer You, and I wanted to ask for some advice. I love investing, and at 20 years old, I have a total of $20,000 across Vanguard, S&P 500, exchange-traded funds. Just so you know, that's just like an index fund with our own 500 companies in probably America if it's an S&P 500. But there are different ones all over. Different S&P stands for Standard & Poor. Mm. And a smaller amount in New Zealand in the top 50 Smart Shares Fund. That would be New Zealand index. What else can I do to get more financially ahead in my 20s? Maybe what you would have done if you would go back to start off your 20s. P.S. I've already had my KiwiSaver in a low-fee growth fund. There's so many things that you're going to get into. But that's just the question. Now let's hear what Mary Holmes says. Try and compose yourself. Wow, you are impressive having $20,000 invested at your age, and I really like your choice of low-fee passive investments. Apparently, many of your mates are pretty good savers too. 18 to 24-year-olds emerged as New Zealand's strongest savers through lockdown, increasing the average cash balance by $600 or 9% during September, which is good, says the ASB chief executive, Victoria Short. This compares with an average of around 5% for all other age groups across the same period. Well done, you guys. Yeah, well done, personally, before we get into the tense moments. Your next steps depend really on whether you want to buy a home within the next 10 years. If so, I suggest you move your deposit money into your medium risk funds to protect against the market downturn near your withdrawal time. And when you are within 2 to 3 years of buying a home, switch to low-risk funds. Not a bad advice so far. But you may not be eyeing home ownership, and that's fine too. Even if you never own a home, all will be well as long as you reach retirement with enough savings to cover your accommodation costs for the rest of your life. Are you still with me? That's quite long. Are the listeners still with me?
I'm barely here, but...
I think they're, you know, the listeners are listening. If you're planning to invest... if you're planning to invest over many decades, there's one way you can up the ante. It's something I could, this is where it's going to get, Greg. It's something I considered in my 20s but didn't quite have the courage to do. What I'm talking about is borrowing to invest, preferably in a low-fee share fund. You won't find it in my book because it doesn't suit most people. You have to be brave and have stickability. Borrowing to invest, sometimes called gearing, is most commonly done with property. As long as the property value grows over the years, you get the gain on the borrowed money as well as your deposit. We're almost done, team. Hang in there. You must have to pay the interest on the loan. But hopefully the rent you receive will cover that and other expenses. The downside is that if you are forced to sell the property at a time when the prices have fallen, and it does happen, you can end up with no money and debt. You're way worse off than if you hadn't borrowed, and when the worst that can happen is you lose your money. We're almost, hang in. I thought it was almost one page, but it's carried on. It's similar with shares. Hopefully the dividends the dividends will cover your interest payments. In a fund, you'll have to withdraw the dividends to pay the interest, but that's okay. As long as the shares grow in value over time, you benefit from gains on the borrowed money as well as your own. This is risky stuff. You must be confident you won't have to bail out of the investment unexpectedly, perhaps in a market slump. Interest rates might rise considerably. In some years, your dividends may not cover the interest, so you have to sell some of your shares. Over the decades, the total returns on the shares must be considerably higher than the interest you pay, or it's not worthwhile. In the past, that has tended to be the case, but who knows about the future? Last three paragraphs. And there's an obvious hitch. It's easier to borrow to invest in property than in shares. Still, you can borrow from some share brokers or perhaps a family member. Oh, God. Or if you buy a home with a revolving credit mortgage, you could add to your mortgage. If you decide to do this, start out small and see how it goes, including how you feel when share prices fall for a considerable period. Or you could just keep doing what you're doing. There's no need for you to take the risk of gearing unless you want to. With the start you have, you're going to be fine financially.
Oh, what a mouthful.
that was a mouthful.
And your question is?
Well, she talked about, hey, you should borrow to invest, even borrow if you're a family member, or take out a revolving credit to borrow, and that's outpaced interest rates.
Yeah, it's a potpourri, isn't it? It's a real mixing bowl of requests and information, and you know, you'd almost have to go through an investor's 101 type guide to unpick it and then pull it all together. Look, there's lots of interesting things in there. Can I say, it just comes back to what it is that you're trying to do. What's your plan? You know, if you plan to be rich, saving in a passive portfolio for retirement's never going to make you rich. It might make sure that you're not poor, but you're not going to be rich, I would think. And, you know, I have this problem about being rich from the point of view it sort of gets people's juices going and the hairs on the back of the neck stick up and they get a bit excited and it just, you know, it's like getting drunk. It's not good for you the next day when you wake up and feel the effects of it. Because to be rich, you have to take risks that for most of us, like 99% of us, that are just unacceptable. Because to become rich, you have to be prepared to lose everything and then start again. Now, we see people who do that. I've seen it with developers that have, you know, risen and then crashed and risen again. You know, the phoenix that comes from the ashes. I admire them. I couldn't do that. I think if I crashed and couldn't pay my debts, I just wouldn't be happy to start again, knowing that there's people out there that, you know, that have lost money as a result of me taking really inappropriate processes, risks, whatever you want to call it, to enrich myself at their expense. But that's what it's about. It's a situation, I make money, but you possibly lose it. A good example here, I mean, I understand that Graham Hart is New Zealand's richest man. Now, some people would say, oh, well, you know, he's probably done it on the backs of the workers, or, you know, and that might be a bit resentful. I'm not resentful. That man took enormous risks. I've followed his progress over the years. And I think he started off as a printer, and then he went and bought a bigger business, and he eventually bought the government printing office, I think, and he just leveraged that over the time, and he borrowed money to invest in businesses that he understood. And then he took a massive massive sort of risk with a company called Burns Philp, which was a business he didn't really necessarily understand because it was a business that imported, if I remember rightly, a lot of ingredients like powders you use in cooking and all those sort of things. A massive Australian company. And he bought into it. The share value plummeted. So he went out and borrowed. I think he borrowed, let's make the numbers up, but, $250,000. No, $250 million. And look where he is now. So he effectively borrowed to invest, but he understood the risks and was prepared to do it. Was he a gambler? Not necessarily, but he took huge risks. How many of us would do that? He went from hero to zero, and at zero he borrows money to become hero again. Well, I admire him, but that's not me. Actually, I don't think that's anyone I know that would do that sort of thing. So what Mary's advocating here is sort of giving people that concept that if you, borrow money to invest, you'll be rich. And that's what, that's the end game. I don't think being rich is the end game. I think not being poor is the end game because that's realistic. Being rich is a bit like in the military saying, I'm joining the military to get the Victoria Cross. Well, what's going to happen is you're going to be dead. Because most people who get the Victoria Cross get it posthumously. That means you get it after you die, which is not much good to you. And you take enormous risk. I've been in the military and I think I'd keep my head down rather than rush off across a stretch of land thinking that I'm impervious to bullets. Because on my luck, I'll wear them all. It comes down to what is it that you're really trying to achieve. Now, this person, as a young person, saving is fantastic. Look, it's much easier to build up those saving habits when you're younger because your needs are less. And while you might not earn as much, for those of us who were at school and then went to university or to a tertiary institution, you could live on the smell of an oily rag. And if you had a holiday job or a part-time job, that money sort of dealt with the so-called extras in life. Mum and Dad were paying for the necessities, but the extras, you were funny. So you're actually able to build up a decent saving habit. I've done financial literacy sessions at Mount Albert Grammar where I went and my kids have gone and still do go for the year 10 classes. And what it is, it's actually about budgeting. It's about saying if you spend less than what you earn, that gives you the ability to save towards an agreed goal. And that goal might be a 12-month goal, it might be a 3-year goal, it might be a 10 or 15-year goal, depending on what it is. So for a year goal might be to buy a device, a 3-year goal might be to buy a car, and 5-year plus might be to save the deposit for a house. Those are goals that you set and you put in place systems that allow you to do that. And it all comes down to spending less than what you earn, letting the savings accumulate over time. Where the money gets invested is a function of time and your risk temperament. Clearly, if you're saving the money for something at the end of the year, you'd put it in the bank. You wouldn't put it in the share market. You wouldn't put it in the property market. You couldn't anyway. It comes down to your time horizon. So if you're saving for retirement and you're in your 20s, putting money into a share fund is not a bad thing to do because it's a long, long-term investment. Shares will always outperform the bank, in my view, but not every quarter or every year. And it comes down to the risk return,
Risk-return benefit?
Well, no, it's understanding how risk and return work.
Oh, yeah.
That it's not just a formula. It's a fact of life that you think about it, that if you're The bank will pay the depositor interest, but the bank will lend the money to someone who will give the bank more money than they're paying the depositor because they've got overheads and profit to make. When they lend that money on to someone, the person borrowing it for property or for business has an expectation they will get a better return over time than the cost of borrowing. Otherwise, why would you do it? Now, it can go wrong, but your belief is whatever you put that money into, your business or property, you'll get a better return. If it's property, it could be residential, it could be industrial, commercial, retail, whatever. You'll look at the rental returns if you're an investor, and you'll think about the potential capital growth, which will really be driven significantly by inflation over time, and you would expect to get a better return. In business, if you borrow money to go into business, which is just another form of share, but it's a private company rather than a public company, you expect to get a much better return than the cost of borrowing because you're putting in your time and effort, your intellectual property. But it doesn't always work out that way. But that's the risk arrangement. The bank, of course, are looking to see whether or not you're going to lose what they think is their money. And if they think you will, they'll ask for it back quite quickly. So if you understand that the share market, which is business, will give you a better return than the property market, and the property market will give you a better return than bank deposits, then you understand risk and return. But the bank is certain and the business is uncertain. The bank, if you put the money in the bank and you get 2 or 3%, the bank will pay you that interest, and you'd have an expectation that the bank will give you your money back when you want it at the end of a term loan, or if it's just on call, which is why you don't go to small banks, because banks overseas do fail. In the US, banks fail a lot, because there's lots of small community banks. In our country, banks are very heavily regulated, so the chances of a bank failing are very, very slight. So when you're then looking to invest, and you're saying my time horizon, like this young person, is reasonably long, and I'm happy to invest predominantly in growth, and I do understand that it goes up and down, I'm not worried about the ups and downs. In fact, when it goes down, that's a great opportunity to buy low-cost investments, as long as you're buying quality, which is why using a managed fund, to me, is a no-brainer, because then you're getting experts to pick the type of investment that your money's going into, like what company. When you do it on your own account, you can sometimes be blindsided by what you read, by what other people tell you, or you might just be really imaginative and dream up something, and you might get lucky, or you might not get lucky. Remember, the end game is to make money by not losing it. If you have to bail out at the bottom of a cycle, you'll lose money. If you put money into something that disappears, you'll lose money. So you want to avoid both of those, and Mary mentions that. The bit that I wouldn't necessarily agree with here is the borrowing to invest. I think borrowing to invest in property is the only way you can do it, because property is a big number. And it's like, how do you eat an elephant? You have to eat it piece by piece. So if you're buying a house, you're not likely to have enough money to buy it for cash. So you put in a deposit, you borrow the rest, you have a contract with the bank that you will pay them back interest and principal over a period of time. That's how you're eating the elephant. You're increasing your equity, but you're reducing debt. And you have an expectation over time that property prices values will go up. And it's quite reasonable in an inflationary period. I mean, I suppose if we had negative inflation, the property values could go down. They can go up and down in the short term because of supply and demand or other factors that are around them. And we're seeing that a little bit at the moment, that the government have determined they want to increase the housing stock. They're going to make it less attractive for investors. So that may have an effect on property values in the short to medium term. And of course, zero migration is not going to help either, is it? So when we're looking at this situation, borrowing for property makes sense. Borrowing to get into a business makes sense. Borrowing to invest in the share market doesn't make a lot of sense. The thing that was in that article, they said, oh, you can use the dividends to pay the interest. Well, good luck on that, because many of these companies don't provide dividends, particularly in one of these index type arrangements. Where's the dividends going to come from? If you're investing directly into companies and you've gone for growth companies, they won't pay dividends either. If you go for a utility, Contact Energy or something like that, yes, they'll pay dividends. Will the dividends be greater than the cost of borrowing? Very unlikely. And they're uncertain and they're paid 6 monthly or annually. Your interest has to be paid monthly. So this gearing becomes negative gearing, so you actually have to have an income that can support that, which is what you need to with a property anyway, generally. It'll be negatively geared even if it's a rental property. So there's a whole lot of other stuff going on. And the issue also there is your ability to sustain a course of action, the discipline, because are you going to be the person when everyone else runs around thinking like Chicken Little, the sky's going to fall in, that you're going to say, no, I'll take a contrary position? When everyone's rushing to the cliff like lemmings to jump off, are you going to be walking the other way? Probably not. Most people can't do that. You know, most people get carried away with the herd, and I understand that. So you have to be incredibly disciplined. So what is the answer? Well, certainly if you're a younger person saving to achieve a certain outcome by investing in the share market, it's a good thing to do. What would I do? I would tend to use if I was going to do that, I'd look at a share fund with a very reputable group, and I might set up a direct debit that goes out of my account every month into that, buying units in that fund. Would I be worried about whether it's a low fee fund or not? No. In fact, I'd prefer to have one where they do actually pay a fee to the fund manager so they can actually do something with the money. Otherwise, I'm just buying the index. So you could say you could go for a growth fund where you'd pay more fees and you'd get over time a better outcome, but there'd be more ups and downs. Or you could go to an index fund with low fees. You'd do better than other alternatives, I would think, over time, but not as well as a growth fund. So they're your choices, really. The issue is, what's your exit strategy? When do you think you're going to pull out? If you pull out early, you may make or not make money. Even if you make money, what do you do with that money then? That's why you need a plan. What is it you're trying to do? If it's a plan for saving for the deposit on a house, it depends on the length of time you've got. And at some point before you access the funds, you've got to say, hang on a minute, I better be a little bit more sensible and conservative here, because I don't want, as Murphy would find, Murphy's law says, just when you want the money, that the market will tank. So you don't do that. Similarly, if you're saving for your retirement, you know, a number of the KiwiSaver funds now have an arrangement where as you get older, the risk automatically changes. That's very sensible. Because you could imagine that you could be saving into the share fund up to, say, the age of retirement, 65, and then at 64 and a half years old, the market crashes. Yeah, you can't handle it and you sell and basically, you know, wipe out all the gains that you've made. Whereas if you balanced it sometime from 60 on and reduce the risk, you're protecting the downside. Here's a good example of that that I saw many years before I got into this industry. There used to be in New Zealand a tax of 40%, which was an inheritance tax. And this particular chap was very heavily into buying the share market, and he was buying and buying and buying the market, and then he died. Now, he died when the market was quite high, but the estate, when it settled, was after the stock market crash in 1987. So if it went from $100 of value, equivalent value, it was now down to 40. The benevolent government, because it was subject to inheritance tax at 40%, taxed it, the 100, at 40.
Oh.
So the estate had to pay 40. Guess what it was worth? 40.
Yeah.
The estate got nothing.
Wow.
So that's how markets can move. So you've got to think, what is the end game? What's the exit strategy? So in that, there are lots of really interesting stuff. And you can kind of unpick all of it and maybe pull it all together. But what we're missing in there is, what's the objective? And what's the level of risk tolerance? What's the time frame? And then the advice then can follow from that. It's the difficulty. I've sympathised with Mary because she's trying to give advice on the face of a letter. I have to give advice when I'm looking someone in the eyes. I have to understand what it is that they truly want and test that to ensure that the advice they get is fit for the purpose. Because there's no one bit of advice that suits all purposes.
No, you may yell it together. You're more measured than I expected when I was reading that myself. So, yeah, it's a good point. We're just wrapping up in that crazy noise in the background. I'll try to edit it out, but there's a bit of construction. Perfectly timed. It's the stop when we started, but started when we started. And if anyone could take the time for review, saw there was value in that. And we got a 5-star review.
A 5-star review?
Yeah, just last week.
Oh, I better go and get a haircut.
Yeah, we got to celebrate. If you want yours read out, we'll read it out to you. But yeah, always the voice of reason, Mr. Moyle.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, mate.